Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Bonulli, CEO of Cedar Gold and their Cedar portfolio. Also, we have Alejandro Tagliavini. He's senior advisor to Cedar Gold. And today we have a very interesting discussion on fine art as an asset class. Before introducing our special guest, just to mention some context, especially in the current environment of what is happening in the world today, which we have as being very similar in history, throughout history, to when there were pandemics or big societal challenges. In many cases, that happened with an exodus from the cities to the countryside, which were what we're seeing today, along with a significant interest in property, real property, farmland, away from the cities, also happening now. And usually also in history, we see the preservation and transmission of wealth through this real property, precious metals like gold and silver, of course, and also fine art. And that fine art is what we'd like to focus on today. So with that, to Alejandro, senior advisor of Cedar Gold. Alejandro?
Hi, good afternoon to those in America, good evening to those in Europe, and good late evening to those in Asia.
I'm Alejandro Tagliavini, senior advisor to Cedar Gold.
Speaking to you from Argentina, and today we have guests of whom the best thing, the most important thing I can say is that they are genuinely nice people. We have Prince Charles Henry Lobkowicz,
member of an ancient European noble family, that will tell us about his amazing Chateau de Bost. We also have Alec Oxenford, a brilliant Argentinian entrepreneur, great art collector, and former president of Arteba, the most important art fair in Argentina. And as you maybe have seen in our announcements, we have invited James Spencer to the church, Duke of Marlborough, but he has accepted very kindly. But a few hours ago, we received a message from his office saying he had a last-minute problem, so he most probably won't participate today. We hope to have him in our next round table. Okay, our host today is going to be Richard Bonulli, CEO of Cedar Gold in Toronto. So, Richard, how are you doing today?
Great. I thought we'd begin with discussion on the background, like a family history background, perhaps, for each of you, Charles and Alec, and how you and your family came towards an appreciation of fine art culturally and as an asset class. If you wanted to begin first, Charles?
I didn't hear the last part, sorry.
Oh, in terms of if you could provide a discussion on how you and your family came towards having an appreciation of fine art, both culturally as well as an asset class.
Well, to be very simple, on my father's side, the Lobkowicz princes, who kind of ruled over Bohemia and then part of Austria, have always been collectors from the 16th century on, and that collection was rather amazing. It was one of the greatest collections in Central Europe with the Liechtenstein collection, you all know. And this collection was stolen twice. First by the Nazis, then by the communists, and we all got it back. And it's not, now you can go and visit it in the Lobkowicz Palace in Prague, in the Czech Republic. But the collection is now under as national treasure, so no paintings could be sold of it. So I'm pushing the family to pursue the collection and make it living and alive and continue purchasing more contemporary art. On my mother's side, who's a princess of Bourbon, the family who ruled France, still rules in Spain, north and south of Italy. They were, of course, huge collectors. And they lost it all after the French Revolution. You can go and visit it at the Louvre or at the National Museum in Italy. But it's something we have in our blood. We've always collected, we've always maintained collection. Some would call it today contemporary art. It was always contemporary art. So we've been going on and collecting, and especially as we have big houses, we have places to show. So about 7 years ago, because my uncle died, my two brothers died, I inherited of 5 castles. Don't think it's good news. They're all in ruins. But I had a lot of empty walls. First of all, I had to create an association to rebuild the castles. I got all the villagers. They all came together. We were building up stones. I've got a castle from the 19th century, which is today the base of where all the Bourbon family meet. I've got a beautiful fortress of the 15th century, which is totally in ruins. And another castle of the 16th century, one of the 18th century, and another one of the 17th century. So basically, I have walls, and I have walls to show art. So it is true that I've been collecting, of course, historical paintings that are linked to the Bourbon family, as all the estates are in the Bourbonnais part of France, which is the central part of France. So there has to be a link, a relevance, of course. But as the family has always been collecting, I've been little by little purchasing contemporary art from friends, and I was involved in the art world. So I've collected, my first pieces were from young British artists, and I've been collecting pieces ever since. And as I organize artist residence every year, they all give me a piece. So regularly I show the pieces. So it's a big adventure. You're supposed to be asking me a question now.
Very interesting, yes. And right. Alec, as well, if you could provide a bit of background in your family history, how you and your family came towards an appreciation of fine art, both culturally and as an asset class.
Alec?
Oh, apologies for that. I was on mute. Yeah, I was saying that I suspect my story began a bit later than Charles Henry's family. It's because it's basically my story. Yeah, there's been some art appreciation and some collecting going on in my family, but nothing, not a lot of focus there. It's business people who cared, but not too much about art. In my case, roughly 12 years ago, I decided that, you know, it's a bunch of serendipitous things happened that really connected me with art. I was invited to be basically the first president of the Friends of Malba. Malba is a contemporary art museum in Buenos Aires. And through that experience, I interacted with the curators, you know, a lot, etc. And long story short, I decided to start working with one of the curators in building a collection. And basically, the whole bias of what I've been doing has that to do with supporting the local art scene. So that's been the focus of what I've been doing. So, for example, I only acquire art from living artists, never from artists who are not alive. I only acquire through galleries, because this way it's like a new, it's a way of financing the production of new art and the cultural production, right? If you buy from a living artist, and also as a way of documenting a period in the history of Argentine art, which is my focus, contemporary Argentine art. So it's basically concentrated on 21st century. So post 2000, very panoramic, covers 150 artists, more or less, approximately 500 pieces. And a lot of it is emerging, even though some internationally recognized names appear as well in the collection. And I've never sold a piece. And I do have a space, semi-private, semi-public, where people can visit the collection. I'm a tech entrepreneur myself, an internet entrepreneur. I founded 4 tech companies, and I see my connection with art as a balance, you know, between what I do in the tech world and what I do as a very passionate and serious hobby in my other part of life.
Alejandro, may I step in?
Sure.
He said something which is essential for me as I was in the art world. Buying through galleries, it is very important. You have to be part of the system, and the relationship between the artist, the gallery, and the collector are essential, and you should never go without that. It's part of the whole system. That's the first thing. There's something I really liked about what he says is the relevance of what he's doing. He's doing something for his, there's a notion of identity, of community, of there's a relevance to his collection, which is something very important. And there's therefore a role to play. Not only he's a collector, he loves art, but he is also someone who makes it alive. He knows exactly what he's looking for. It's from his area. It's a living artist. And there's a relationship. It's not someone going down an alley saying, I want this, this, and that. That's the sense and the importance of the collector, what the soul of a collection.
If I can step up now, and thank you very much, Charles Henry, for your very kind words. The only thing I say is that I feel very humble to be part of this table here, because I know that Charles Henry and his family, as well as the Duke of Marlborough, who's not present, you know, as he said, you know, carry this in their blood, because they've been doing this very, very relevant activity and very relevant function in society, which is preserving masterpieces for centuries, so that, you know, they basically continue to be there, right? So it's a costly and costly thing to do, which requires a lot of effort and a lot of dedication. And personally, I'm very impressed when I see people doing this across generations, you know, because again, we all know how easy it is for things to just disappear and vanish. And when you see the product of centuries of work alive, very much alive and vibrant, it's something almost miraculous, no? So congratulations for that.
Alex, as you know, my link to the contemporary artist is my love of what they call classic art. Every contemporary artist I've collected, or I've worked with, or has a huge culture in art. They just don't pop up and try to create something. It always comes, the number of times I flew artists to Naples to go and see a sculpture, brought them to the Louvre, brought them to Versailles, it's just a continuation. May I ask you, your collection is specifically South American, right?
It is, yes.
That makes sense. And the idea of making something regional in a world of globalization is a notion of identity, culture. It's something which is very important to me in a world in which there's no such thing of South American history, French history, English history. People learn about world history, but before anything, I'm a European. Do you know what I mean? That's what I want to put forth. You are from South America, and that is your identity. And I think an identity in today's world, in which identity are disappearing for globalization, is something I cherish and I admire, and I congratulate you.
Thank you very much again for that. Yeah, and I'd add to that there's two reasons mainly why I focused South America and Argentina. And the first one is, of course, that I'm from there. It's my identity, as you just now mentioned. The second is it's an area where I can actually move the needle. I can have impact. It's possible for me to do something significant. If I wanted to do this in other regions of the world, it would be highly unlikely that I would be able in my lifetime to really move the needle and change and impact significantly the way things are. Because, for example, there's collections like yours, you know, which basically it's almost impossible for somebody to replicate, you know, because it just, you know, it just for many, many reasons, right? Whereas in my case, I truly believe and I aspire to do that, that, you know, I've been collecting for 12 years, as I mentioned, seriously, basically with a curator and the whole, you know, the whole thing. But maybe in 20 or 30 years, hopefully I'll be able to say, you know, there's a body of work which represents something, which has its own, it's cohesive. It has meaning. It documents a period, and therefore, you know, it's relevant forever. And I would love that to be the case. I'm not there yet, but I would love that to be the case.
I love the word relevance. It's a word I use often in one's life, in one's action. And a collection is relevant to the person who creates it. And we see more and more shows who were only in the past based on the name of an artist, a peer and everything. Now you see more and more shows around the world around a collector. Because you really feel that soul of the collector and the coherence of his collection. Why did he collect like that? What is the message? What is he trying to say? So I love everything I'm hearing.
And no,
please.
Yes. Yeah, I'm receiving several messages through WhatsApp. One is from James Marlborough. He's apologizing because he's not going to be able to make it tonight. He apologizes to you both, Richard, and all of the audience. And I have a question for Alec from Yara Heredia from New York. She asks, I'd like to know if he feels, Alec, feels the objective behind his art collection has changed throughout the years, if he thinks about collecting art as a dynamic process, as in the collection changing and amplifying its universe by the acquisition of every new piece. Mm-hmm. Is that clear?
Yes.
A nice question.
I think the answer is kind of yes and no, meaning yes in the sense that to some degree, each new piece makes the whole slightly different. And in that sense, there are changes. And for example, when I decided, you know, to build this very contemporary collection, at some point, I decided to start buying performances. Well, buying a performance, which is something very contemporary, you know, the latest curator at MoMA, the latest new curator at MoMA is the curator for performances. And it's a very, very complicated thing to collect, of course, because you don't buy the artist and the performance. You buy, I would say, kind of the intellectual property around the performance and the, you know, the right to reproduce it. Sometimes a support like a film or a video or a picture or clothes or something. So when I started collecting performances, for example, well, yeah, the whole, there was a tension between the performances and the previous works. And I would say the whole collection kind of adjusted to that. On the other hand, it continues to be a reflection of my time. And that hasn't changed. And I hope that that doesn't change ever. Right. But I would love to hear Charles Henry's views on this question, if that's okay.
What was the question? I just wanted to say something about the performance. It's always been. When we supported Beethoven, Mozart, or Haydn, there was no recording. So what did we pay for? A performance. So there's nothing new in that notion of performance. Okay, we own the possibility of performing it a couple times throughout a few years. But the idea of buying a performance is not that contemporary, but it is essential. L'instant, le moment, le being part of something. I love the intellectual approach. And that is the true, it's also part of being a collector. It's not just having a statue or a painting in front of you. Now, what was the full question?
The full question, let me go back to it.
Sorry. You don't remember it either.
I have so many questions here. I'd like to know, Yara Heredia from New York, she asks, I'd like to know if he feels the object behind his art collection has changed throughout the years. If he thinks about collecting art as a dynamic process, as in the collection changing and amplifying its universe by the acquisition of every new piece?
Of course, for me, it's a big question. Yes. I go forward on every piece. It makes me think. It makes me progress. It brings me to different directions. So the answer would be yes, as it wasn't asked to me, but yes.
Okay, I have another question for Alec also, Rafael Steinhauser from Sao Paulo, Brazil. The question is, what does art and technology, artists and tech entrepreneurs have in common?
That's a very good friend of mine and partner, Rafael. A lot. Contemporary art and technology have a lot of connection. I think both focus on the essence of our time. It's the cutting edge, right? But it doesn't stop there. What I've seen is that very often technologists have a very refined feeling for art. For example, I work with technologists, and I'd say a third to 40% of engineers also play an instrument, for example, and are very, because music is very logical and very mathematical, in particularly the better music. And coding is also very mathematical and logical. And this is my own conclusion about the situation. But empirically, what I've seen is that there's a big overlap between appreciation of music and technology. And also the way artists and technologists, engineers look, if you put in a living room 20 or 30 contemporary artists and 20 or 30 engineers, they look very similar, and that's been my finding. They have behaviors which are similar. They're somewhat off. Of course, you can never generalize, but I've seen this many times. People who are sometimes socially a bit awkward, the way of thinking and their sense of humor, their approach is very different to most people. I've seen very, very often these connections. So yeah, there's a strong connection, I believe, between particularly engineers, technology engineers, and contemporary art and artists. It's a fascinating connection there.
Very interesting. And another question we have on the in terms of like looking at it as an asset class, like what is the documentation involved in the acquisition, the trading, and the transference of fine art? Is it tied to a type of documentation process? If you can discuss that, how that happens. Charles?
I'd prefer Alex because he's more of a collector. Actually for contemporary art, yes. That's why it's very good to work with galleries. You have everything. You have the research, you have everything. And there's a few artists who refuse to sign their paintings. I always have a picture taken with them and their painting to make sure. But that's more of a question for Alex. And for classical art, the process is much more complicated. Much more complicated. It takes much more time. For example, we had an El Greco we were interested in. El Greco, something that was recognized as an El Greco 20 years ago, if it's not stamped by the specialist of El Greco at the Prado Museum in Madrid, is not an El Greco. So the process for classical art can be a nightmare. But it's more of a question Alex would answer.
Thanks a lot, Charles. As Charles said, I think if you work with galleries, the system is the whole process is easier. When you start collecting, meaning, you start having a numerous pieces, recording what you have, and you know, for tax purposes, for lending purposes, for your own accounting, personal accounting, starts to become a significant effort. In my case, you know, there's accountants working, there's managers of the collections, curators, myself, and of course the galleries helping. It is an extremely relevant part of doing this in a serious way, and I believe that's the way definitely it should be done. You know, so with a proper systems and the proper database that allows also, if the time comes, to be able to exhibit the works nationally and internationally, lend them, etc., insure them, and all of that, right? So not rocket science, but it does require method, and it is greatly facilitated if you work with good galleries. Yeah.
Okay, I have another question from Erica Baum from Argentina. She wants to know if you think that the about your role as a collector in relation with the pandemic that we are currently experiencing, and what would be the importance of philanthropy?
Yeah, Erica actually works with us in the collection. She's fantastic. What we did in our collection, given the fact that, you know, the focus is supporting the scene, and the pandemic hit particularly hard in Argentina, there's, you know, huge unemployment, big recession, you know, lots of suffering. We came up with grants for artists in pain. So came up with an independent jury of artists, 10 of them, and they basically screened 60 other artists who basically received a grant from the collection during the pandemic, in order to pay for living expenses, you know, and basically, endure the consequences of the pandemic in a better way. It was, you know, what I could do, and it helped, you know, as I said, 60 artists plus the 10 jurors, so 70 artists total. Which hopefully, you know, suffered a bit less because of that. Yeah, that's the initiative that I put in place. I believe philanthropy, as the one Charles Henry and his family have been doing for a few centuries, is extremely relevant always, because it shows many things. It shows that those who can actually care about the rest. It produces a good example on others about generosity and commitment to community, society, country, continent, etc. And honestly, I think it's extremely gratifying to help others as well. So I'm a strong believer in that we should all do as much philanthropy as we can. Yeah.
What he said, it's again comes from the soul. It's not an intellectual process in your case, and I love that. It's just what we call a reflex. You know what I mean? It's a reflex of the soul. You just do it. And then you ask yourself, but you just do it. And you do it in your, bravo, congratulations. I couldn't have said better than you.
Listen, Charles Henry, having you here, let me change you a bit in the discussion. Tell us a bit about your Chateau de Beauce and your efforts to restore it.
Well, I remember a cold, cold winter night. It's a castle. You have to understand, my grandparents had 15 castles. So I didn't know them all very well, and this one I hardly knew. And I was actually in Argentina, and I came back, and I said, where should I go? And my parents go to see this house we don't really know. They had it for 15 years and went on 2 weekends. So the house was a little bit run down. And the house was freezing. The heating wasn't working. It was a damn nightmare. I'm not staying here. Okay. And then I was walking around and I was going, oh, it's kind of nice to have so much space. And it's not the house. It's not the land. It's not the obligation. Why did I start doing this crazy thing, restoring all these castles, creating jobs, putting a lot of time? It is the people. It is the people. You have a demand of the people. You have to understand that in France, outside of Paris, Lyon, and maybe Marseille, and Brittany, and Normandy, and Brazil, there's not much happening. The industry is disappearing. So you have a lot of villagers who are very proud of their history. And it is really them who, because of their attitude, because the needs, because the presence, and they became very close to me very quickly. These families have been close to my family for hundreds of years. So it just happened. I am more attached to the land and to the people, to actually the real estate itself. So this is how it happened. So I, of course, put the heating, put the things, brought back, so I did the rooftops, made it all comfortable, invited people, launched my foundation, got all the villagers. Every Friday and every Saturday, I've got at least on every estate 60 people who come and make it alive, restore, open to the public, talk to the guests. So it's a collaboration with the people of my area. Do you want to see a few pictures?
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, yeah. Please.
Okay, yeah. Really, I'm crap with this, okay?
Okay.
Okay, now, this is not the button to press on, so this is already not good. Sélectionnez plus de photos. Conservez. Oh God, I don't know how to cancel this. Something happened. My phone's clicked. Oh my God. I'm not a big tech wizard. Okay. Now.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, this is taking so much time. By the way, I want to tell you that today is in France a sad year, a sad day, because today it is the day of the beheading of Louis the 16th.
Right. Wow. Okay.
So this is to give me time with these damn photos. I had everything was prepared and everything has now gone weird. But actually, all these things have an effect for the very simple reason. Okay, now I think this is going to work. Okay, up. Can I go to the next one?
Yeah,
this
yeah,
is
sure.
where I live in France, central France, the Bourbonnais. Okay. The Bourbonnais is a very interesting area because it's called Bourbonnais because the word comes from the Bourbons. And the Bourbons started in this place on my estate. 1,100 years ago, and we still have it today. Now, you are all going to hate me because I just cannot. I've got to do this. I'm going to do this again, and then we're going to.
Sure.
Écran. Okay, now I think I got it right. Lancez la diffusion. 1, 3, 2, 1. Okay, this is going to work well. Oh, I'm going the other way. Okay, this is for Louis the 16th. Beheaded today. Okay, this is nothing to do like the Duke of Marlborough, but this was the first house I restored. And this is where I show more 19th century art and 20th century art. This is why I have an artist resident. I came, there was no rooftop, there was no heating and hardly electricity, so I'm very proud to show you. I have now electricity.
Right.
So this is the house I live in today. This is another one I'm restoring. This is the other one I'm now restoring, and we're going to make it a museum based on the history of the Bourbon. What's really interesting is that the Bourbon started 11 centuries ago, and they're still ruling today. We have two Bourbon rulers, which are the King of Spain. Felipe, King of Spain, is still a Bourbon. And Luxembourg, the Grand Duke of Luxembourg. But as you know, the Bourbons went to rule from Bourbonnais to France, to most of Italy, and even ruled in Brazil, as the Brazilian emperors were Bourbons, Orléans Braganza. So this is how I found find my houses. This is the plan. This will be a museum based on the Bourbon, 11 centuries. And what's amazing is that the Bourbons and all my cousins are still collectors, continuing art collectors, and I still find contemporary art which is based on a history. This is a third estate I inherited. So we're in the 15th century here. This was 3 years ago. We've advanced a lot. Can you see the pictures?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, this is the kind of an exceptional 15th century fortress, which for me is the ideal place for contemporary art. The spaces are huge, absolutely huge. And if there's one estate that fascinates all my contemporary art friends, would be this one. This is the way I found it about 8 years ago. Under rubble, it was a nightmare. And how I do it, thanks to all my villagers who come and restore, clean up. Believe it or not. And they come and restore and free. And the spaces are huge. And by far, this is the one in which all my contemporary friends want to do performances and do shows and expositions. I just wanted to share that this is a thing we do with the locals. It's a very popular thing in my area to come and support. So I'm trying to get diffusé l'écran. 1 second. How the hell do I go come back to you? Okay. And, yeah. And hey, I am. Hello. So yeah. This is to show you that the environment is very countryside, but I've had so many artists come here and they just love it. So my idea is to do a very traditional museum about the Bourbons. The estate in which I live will be more 20th century and a little bit of contemporary art. And the 15th century estate will be really oriented towards contemporary art. But so you see, I still have work to do.
Interesting.
Yeah, a lot of work.
And
Is it okay if I share and show a bit some images?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Very beautiful.
Yeah. Sure. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So just give me 1 second. I think here we are. Sorry, I'll start from the. Okay, so these are some images of the kind of, you know, contemporary art that I collect. This is a piece from Eduardo Navarro that here is exhibited at. It's an installation, which is you see on that wall at Malva in Buenos Aires. It's 800 plus titles of movies and books that the artists believe should exist. Understand? They don't exist. But it's titles of movies and books that he thinks should exist. And they're fascinating.
Wow.
Very, very, very interesting concept. When you go to the next one, this one also from Eduardo Navarro, that's a picture in the Biennale in Sao Paulo. It's a very big piece. It comes actually with a palm tree that you see over there. And the whole point of this piece is to tell us the message that listening to nature is relevant. So you see, you hear from that trumpet over there in an amplified way, the noises of the wind and the birds, et cetera, and the palm tree. And that goes on all the way to inside the building, where if you sit and try to listen, you hear in an amplified way what nature is telling us, which is particularly relevant because of global climate and all of that. So a very conceptual, very interesting piece. This is a piece from Diego Bianchi, whom I, you know, collect very much. This one as well. This is human hair, by the way. It's called The Beast. Very, very interesting piece. And just to very quickly show you, these are some of the performances. The place where I'm, I have my mini museum. This is a house in the outskirts of Buenos Aires, very contemporary. I think it plays a good contrast to Charles and Reese houses.
Right. Yeah.
Below this house, there's a couple of places where I actually show once a year. Once a year I change it. I show it, you know, often. I show parts of the collection. I invite a curator and then can display in an exhibition, which varies annually, and invite people to do that. So, we can go in more detail, but I just thought it was an interesting play between the images Sergeant Rue was showing and these.
The house is absolutely incredible, beautiful. I'm a great lover of contemporary architecture, but they have to be geniuses. Otherwise, it's a nightmare. And yours is absolutely beautiful, full of light, and I love the line of it. And there's a story behind it. You have to tell me more about that architecture. And the two pieces I absolutely adore is the amplifier. In a very different mood. In a very different mood. We don't know how to hear. We don't know how to listen, and we don't know how to look. I realize that just for myself, I just change the position of a painting and I see it totally different. We always have to work on all our senses. And on another base, the story of the books and the movies is just great. Mm-hmm. I love that one.
Great. I have a question.
Can you tell us more about that architecture of your house? It's absolutely amazing.
Thank you very much. The architect is called Miguel Silva. He's a young local architect, but he's inspired in an American architect I love very much, and him as well, which is called Richard Meyer.
Of course.
You identified very quickly light. You know, it's a house built to capture light from everywhere. The other big line behind the vision for the house is the integration with nature. There's from every single place in the house, you have a direct connection to the outside and to nature. So light and nature, plus, of course, it's a very good place to exhibit art for many reasons, but it's a bit long to comment on. But light and nature and art all coincide in the place here. And thank you very much. I love it.
There's nothing aggressive in that architecture. It's linear. Not only you see the nature around it, but in the middle of nature, it fits very beautifully because it is beautiful.
Thank you very much. Your houses, those are really beautiful.
Yeah, well, yours is more heating than mine.
No. I was wondering.
I have a question from Fariao in the United States. He wants to know if foreign visitors that go to Argentina could visit your collection, Alec.
Yes, they could. It's inside a gated community. So we need an appointment, but of course, yeah, and it's relatively easy to find me online. And of course, we'll set up a visit. It happens very often. It will be very glad to invite whoever is interested. Yeah.
And Charles, I wanted to ask on, do you have like some examples of your collection that you could display on the screen and maybe discuss some of the messaging as well? Do you have some examples?
Oh my God, I've got to go through this.
Okay.
I'll be looking.
Okay.
I'll be looking.
Yeah,
I'll be looking. I can tell you about some. Of course, I collect 17th, 18th, 19th century. But I, as when I was a kid, I was 18, 19, I knew, first of all the young British artists. I was living in London. I didn't have a lot of money, but they had even less than I did. So I worked a lot with people, with all the young British artists, from Tracy Emin to Damien to the Chapman brothers. I don't know if you know them, but that was my first role. But I've also, you were talking about technology earlier. It's a very, I had a lot of conversation about technology with James Turrell. James Turrell is the famous artist who works with light. Do you know him?
Of course. He has actually a place in a province in Mendoza, in Argentina. He's an extraordinary person. Yeah.
He's the kind of artist of today I'm fascinated with. I'll give you an example. He works with lights in very small tonalities of light, architecture, of course. It goes so far that I was contacted by one of my friends who actually won twice the America's Cup, that you must know. He's a Swiss person. And because James Turrell had worked with the NASA, realizing that for people who have to, or they can be they can be on boats and they have to go for a race or going around the world. So the sleeping pattern has to be very regulated for them to go in deep sleep. Same thing with people in. And they worked with James Turrell because he has such a conscious of color, and we know how much color affects on people. So yes, these links are more than one thing. When you touch art, you go in so many fields and so many directions.
Interesting. And
yeah. I have another question here. I would like to know, says Micah Dietrich from Argentina, I would like to know if I like having a collection of Argentinian artists. All Argentinian artists could get more exposure worldwide.
Yes, that's a very important question in living in Argentina. You know that the world is how the world is, and a lot happens outside of Argentina, actually, you know, and it's maybe easier to participate in that global conversation if you're closer to, you know, some places like New York or London or Paris, etc. So I tend to believe that participating in the conversation is very relevant, and therefore I do multiple things to help artists participate in that conversation. For example, I have a grant which I give to 15 artists every year, and between 7 and 8 twice a year, so 15 total on average. And an independent jury screens and selects them, and then we pay for international travel, for exhibitions, residences, trainings, whatever it is. And that, for, you know, it can make a big difference, because many artists that have something to say and something to show basically just cannot do it because they lack the means to visit internationally, right? So that's one thing I do. The other thing is I'm a member of the Latin American and Caribbean Fund, which is led by Patti Cisneros in the Museum of Modern Art in New York in MoMA. And through that involvement, I also try to turn the light on to art in my region, and educate and help others understand it, and hopefully help some of these artists to participate in that conversation that happens in places like MoMA, which is, you know, an extremely relevant player in contemporary art globally. Yeah.
I have another question here. I'm looking for it. How you, Alec, imagine yourself finishing your collection, says Simba from Brazil.
Never finishes.
Never finishes, right. You're right.
Follow Jose's example and not finish it. You know, his ancestors started, in the 10th century or 15th century, and for multiple centuries, you know, they've continued, and he continues with their legacy. So hopefully this is a beginning, but not an ending, you know, and, I don't know what will happen, but I really hope that this is the beginning. I never see this as a process with an ending, a beginning and an end. It's more a journey that I've started, you know, and hopefully others will follow me.
Well, you, Charles Henry, know a lot about it, huh? After so many centuries of your family with collecting art and your...
Yes, but history can be such changes, I think, in today's world. You know, in olden times, it was easy. There wasn't that much taxes. Transmission was easy. You had one eldest son. He got the castle. He got the collection. Everything was easy. You tried to, the girls to go and marry someone with money so there wouldn't be a problem. And the other brothers would go to church or to the army. But today, transmission is also something very important. Some people transmit it to foundations. But that's also very difficult because you have to have the right people or to your children. It depends. It is a worry for me what's going to be after me. And I'm very strongly thinking of putting everything in a structure foundation, which I'll have, of course, members of the family. But I want rules, very strict rules, that everything I've done has a future with the same mind and the same purpose I'm doing it with. We all know that children can sell it off very easily. So I'm really strongly thinking about, or a nephew or whatever, I'm really thinking very strongly of putting everything in a foundation.
Interesting. And right. What about, do you have like websites where people can view the collections virtually and maybe information on how to view it, hopefully in the future, like physically on site? But, virtually online.
Are we talking to me or to?
Both, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay.
Charles.
Let's go back to Argentina, then I'll pick up.
Okay. Alec.
All right.
Thank you, Charles Henry. Yeah. In my case, the art that I collect is not globally renowned and therefore requires context and explanation for the global public to understand it. So in that sense, what I've started doing basically 2 years ago, it's a project that would last probably 4 years total, is we've started documenting through a large number. It's been 45 young researchers and young curators documenting the context around, a bunch of pieces in the collection, maybe 40 or 50 of them to start. I've developed essays providing this context and also essays about each piece and about the artist with a deep interaction with the artist in the process. As a result of this, in roughly 2 years from now, we are more or less, 50% into the project. We'll have a couple of books that will probably be online. It'll be books is not the best way. It's the living document, but some kind of publication that will also have it'll be in English and Spanish, and it'll be online as well as have a physical support, so that whoever wants to understand and is curious today or in the future can do so effectively. Okay.
Well, I'm very humbled in front of such a great collector. No, what I do, I they're not online. I don't want them online. I want a private relationship with people. But what I'm doing is I'm putting online a painting and then someone's a painting, sculpture, piece, something, and someone talks about it, putting it in context and talking about it. But I want it, I am not a museum. I want something very adapted to what it is and how it is. So I'm doing more objects, one piece and a story. And that's more what I'll be putting online than showing everything like if it was a museum.
Interesting. You have other questions, Alejandro, that have come in? Or?
Can I do that?
Yeah,
sure. Yeah.
Charles Henry, how do you, besides thinking about this structure, et cetera, why do you think your family has been able to maintain such a relevant legacy all the way until today? I mean, what was it that differentiated? Because so much has been lost, and there's if you think of it, not that many examples of, there's a handful probably, of families that have really managed to maintain a cohesive group of a relevant collection across centuries, right? And it seems
yes.
like you're,
first.
What happened? You know, what did they do?
Okay. First of all, every country is very different. In England, you had something called the National Trust that allowed to maintain a house and a full collection. That's one thing. In France, I was talking about Louis XVI. We had a French Revolution. So things have become much more. I would say that in France, there's no house that has still maintained it. That's why I would I'd love to talk to the Duke of Marlborough. Houses have been emptied because of the French Revolution and things. There's two things. On the Bourbon side, everything, most of the collection you find in the Museum of the Louvre, very simple. But on the Lobkowitz side, my father's family, it's just history. Very simple. We had the palaces, we had the collections, like other people did, like the Liechtenstein and everything. And it was taken off by first the Nazis and then the communists, and we got it back. It's just a question of history. We were lucky, basically. We were lucky. In countries like Austria and Germany, there's a law that allows the eldest son to inherit it and to keep it. While in France, we have to disperse because of law and inheritance laws. So every collection is very different. In my case, the collection isn't there anymore for a lot of it. We've maintained quite a few things. It's just luck because I love it. Very simple. And for the palace, it's just, in a certain way, it's history. But also, I'm not sure that if it wasn't a national treasure, part of the paintings would not disappear. So every right. collection is very different. You live in a much more, I would say, free world about these things. Do you understand? We have a heavy history in the past. So we're doing for the best we can. So, and some people, that's why I was talking about transmission. You have to be very careful about how to transfer to the next generation and to the future. And I think for it to be maintained, you have to, at every generation, you have to think of that very clearly for the next generation. I hope I answered the question. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Thank you very much. That was great.
Okay. I'm coming to Argentina to visit.
Yeah, you should come.
An honor and a pleasure.
Yeah, you got to come skiing.
But only if I can come to France and some of the other places I saw in the pictures.
Oh, yeah, right. Work. You are always welcome. My house is actually very open to people. You have to understand that these castles and these houses before the revolution were open to everybody. Versailles, people could walk in, walk out. It's not at all like today. You know, you have to pay your entrance and you have these rules. These houses are made to have people. And I love the idea that actually what you're saying about your collection in your house, you actually want to have people who have something to share with you somewhere. It's not about, I want to show my collection. You want people who are interested. And you want to, art is also about sharing. And that you have. You want people who want to come and see and not just to see Mr. Collector in Argentina. They want to see, to understand, and to share. And as you know, you learn a lot from people who come and visit your collection.
Yes.
All right. Well, we are out of time right now. So we have to give an end to this, unfortunately. Anything else you would like to add, Charles Henry, Alec?
Question on your thoughts of like your hope and vision of your legacy for the future. What are your thoughts there for your hope and vision of your legacy? Alec, did you want to go first? Or?
Okay. Yeah, as kind of I hinted, I mean, I just hope that we find a way, and hope maybe talking with Charles Henry, you know, I eventually can come up with a way to make sure that it's preserved, right? So that, mm-hmm. you know, multiple generations down the line, people can still enjoy and understand and appreciate a moment in history, which I think is a very interesting one and fun. I don't have yet a specific solution to that problem, but it is in my to-do list, and I hope to find it before I'm, you know, out of the journey, whatever, in 30 or 40 years, hopefully. So, yeah, it's up there, but I don't have a right
okay. Okay.
You were asking me a question earlier, and this will be linked to what he just said. He didn't speak about himself.
Sure.
Not one moment. It's about an experience. It's about a journey. And that's, and a role. He has a role to play about art, about his community, about the artists from his part of the world.
Yes.
And that's what we want to transmit. Not only by talking about the art, it's an experience, it's a journey. You want other people to go through it and to maintain a social role. And that's where his collection is going to survive and pursue what he's been doing. It's not about one person. He doesn't want a statue in the middle of his courtyard with him. I don't want one for certain. And that's why collections will pursue. It's an experience. It's a journey. It's sharing. And from generation to generation. Congratulations.
Congratulations to you. A very, very fun moment, and I learned a lot, and a big pleasure and honor to have this conversation.
I've already met you somewhere, but I don't know where.
Okay. Really, thank you, everybody. Very much. Yeah, thank you so much, everybody.
Again, I want to point out the message I was just received from the James Duke of Marlborough, apologizing to all of us, all of you, for not making it today, but he promises to make it some other day. So he's willing to make it some other day. Okay. So thank you guys very, very much. It's been very, very interesting. And Richard.
Yep. Thank you so much. Yeah. Great, great message. Very meaningful work in, as an investment class, and what we make of it and the legacy for the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you very
gentlemen.
Much.
Yeah. Thank you.
The world is beautiful. We speak to the whole world there. From Iran to everywhere. This is great. Goodbye, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Take care,
everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Ciao.
Yeah.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.